Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil, el centro de Ozil, Giroud, gol, gol del Arsenal, gol de Giroud.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
How's it all going? How was your weekend?
It was very good, thank you. It was... Well, the big news, of course, Jam and Buttergate continues to unfold.
Really?
Yes. I mean, as you'll be aware, we've never really had a reaction like it, have we, to anything we've ever talked about?
No, for all the football, for all the interest that people have in football and what Arsenal do and transfers and results and big games, Butter and Jamgate is clearly the most pressing issue on the minds of our listenership, which is great to know. It's good to after 91 episodes, to find out what people are really interested in.
Well, that's it. I mean, I don't know why we didn't start with that, to be honest. But I was out on Friday night in central London in a bar in Soho, and a man came up to me to shake my hand. His name was Maz, if he's listening, because he too is an exponent of the butter and jam toast theory.
Wow.
And I have to say, I mean, I haven't done the maths, but I feel like the people are with me.
I would go with that. I have to say, having been bombarded by it on Twitter in the immediate aftermath of the podcast and pretty much all week, I would say yes. Butter and jam is the clear winner. Absolutely.
Now, has that given you any pause for reconsideration?
No, not at all. What it's done is essentially consolidated my position as the jam only guy, because essentially, what you are, you butter and jam people, you're like Westlife. You know what I mean?
Oof.
Super, super popular. Everyone loves Westlife. But we jam-only people, we're like the cool band that there are only a few people like, that actually people heard of before they were even cool. So that's what we are. Right. So you're Westlife and we're, I don't know. I don't know any bands who are cool, actually, so it's a bad analogy.
No, I know. So that's the one flaw in this analogy.
But hey, I'm comfortable where I am.
I don't either, but why would I? Because I'm a populist, you see.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm appealing to the masses.
Yeah. You're the X factor. You are what's the thing? What are you like? A Jason Statham
Simon
movie.
Cowell? Oh, right. Jason Statham movie, yeah.
Yeah,
well, you know,
like
In every Jason Statham movie, he eats toast with butter and jam. It's like his trademark, isn't it?
It's his killer movie, exactly.
Otherwise, people will be turned away from the cinema in disgust. Mm. Well, look, so that's mainly been my week, to be honest, dealing with the fallout from that. What about yourself? Any news from that side of the sea?
No, not really. Not really. I think I've got a bit of a cold, which is annoying. But generally a quiet weekend, enjoying, you know, the football and enjoying just life, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Yeah, no dramas. No dramas. That's a good thing.
No drama. No, like Mary J. Blige, just no more drama in your life.
Is she a cool band? Could we be Mary J. Blige?
I don't think. I mean, no. That song's about 15 years old. I think I've shown myself up, if anything. So, Arsenal.
Yes. That's why we're here, and jam.
It's not all about, you know, bread products and preserves.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that could be, couldn't it? I mean, we could spin it out. No, the game was good, wasn't it? 3-0?
Yeah, it was quite reminiscent of the Watford game, wasn't it? Because in the first half, both teams had chances to score. Certainly, Swansea had a brilliant chance, didn't they, in the... about 20 minutes in when Gomes went through. And, well, I mean, look, I think there was an element of shitness to what Gomez did when he went through, right? I think that's fair to say. That he kind of fluffed that chance. But at the same time, there were two things that struck me. One was the fact that Petr Cech didn't go down early and didn't give him an easy decision to make. You know, he kind of stood up and, in a sense, thwarted him with some just physical presence.
Yeah, it was like a mind game, wasn't it? Mm. You know, it was that thing of who's going to go first. His positioning was really good. He didn't come too far and get stranded outside the box in a sort of Almunia-esque fashion.
No.
But equally, he didn't commit, didn't go to ground. So it forced Gomez to think about it. And for a guy who gets caught offside that often, that may present a bit of a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, this is a guy who, when it comes right down to it, his first thought is to be a gigantic cat.
Yeah.
So
I have to say, I obviously don't never want to see the opposition score, but that might be my favourite celebration in the Premier League. It's so strange, isn't it?
It really is odd. It really is odd. So I think, you know, perhaps there was a touch of the feline to his decision making there. But the second thing about that whole thing was Hector Bellerin sprinting back, making up what, 30 yards? Maybe 30 yards.
Yeah,
on the guy.
I think he sort of, you know, he broke the space-time continuum in that passage of play. He was that fast. I think he's probably stuck back in like 1995 or something now.
Yeah.
You know, some sort of weird Back to the Future thing.
Yeah, exactly. He, if he turns up to a training today in a DeLorean, nobody would be surprised wearing a kind of a... He would make a good Marty McFly, wouldn't he, Hector Bellerin? He kind of got that youthful charm to him. Could imagine him skateboarding and then being chased by a load of Tottenham fans, and then all the Tottenham fans getting covered in poo from like a lorry, like what happened to Biff.
Yeah, and that hair on the big screen, wow.
Yeah.
It looked great. Mm. But I thought he did brilliantly, but I think you're right, that what Cech did effectively allowed him to get back. You know, it was kind of a combined joint effort. But the recovery pace was insane, and he also produced that block on the line where he crashed into the post, albeit in an offside situation.
Yeah.
But I thought we talk about his attacking play a lot, so it was great to see a couple of big defensive contributions from him.
Yeah, and I think it's the defensive awareness, you know, because if I was playing football and I, you know, a guy like Gomez went through, I probably would have just stood there going, ah, oh, fuck, well, this is going to be a goal now any minute. Yep, there it is. And now he's a big cat. But, you know, that's probably why I never played top-level football. That and the, you know, the complete lack of talent. But just to be that switched on and to, in a way, you know, when you see a player make a run into a box from an attacking position, sometimes that effort is rewarded because the ball falls for them. Like Vermaelen, it used to happen quite a lot to Vermaelen, didn't it? He'd sort of just pop up in the box somewhere and it's like, oh, fuck, what the hell is... A, what the hell is he doing there? And B, oh, good, there's a goal. And it worked in a similar way from a defensive point of view, that he just sort of dug in and got rewarded for that effort.
Yeah, I think it's awareness, but it's also desire. As you say, a lot of players, I think, would have given that up, but he didn't. And obviously, that was a massive, massive point of the game because Swansea probably had the better of the chances in the first half. We didn't really click, did we? I mean, I don't know what was behind that. If there was a bit of a hangover from the Sheffield Wednesday game for a few players like Giroud, I don't know. But in the second half, it was a very different beast. And if you talk about the movement of a player, the movement of Olivier Giroud on that first goal was like fascinating to watch, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. When you see replays of it, there was a lot to it. You know, this hiding behind Mertesacker thing was great. I enjoyed that. And then I was looking at it going, why is he pulling Mertesacker's shirt out of the way?
Yeah.
What's he pulling his shirt for? You know, maybe some propulsion. I don't know what it was. He was trying to slingshot around the sun, some kind of shit like that. And then he took a step one way and Ashley Williams was trying to come around the other side to block him off and to get goal side and obviously prevent him getting the header. But just a final little shimmy. Like, Giroud's not necessarily a guy that you would associate with quick feet. If you were going to have a dancing competition, he wouldn't be the guy. He wouldn't be the guy that you'd pick. But this little move one way, and then he stepped back, and I guess there's some measure of anticipation and awareness of where the ball might end up, and a really good header as well.
Yeah, I think it was like he was trying to sort of catapult himself into space off Mertesacker. And while I agree he's not the daintiest on his feet, his movement in the penalty box has always been really good. You know, he's always made those sort of trademark near-post runs. But this was a really well-worked set piece. I think I said last week it looks a little bit like we're improving in that area. And great delivery from Ozil and a good run and good header. So it kind of needed, I felt like it probably needed to be a set piece to get us in front. You know, we hadn't produced a huge amount of opportunities. Giroud and Campbell had missed a couple, but our attacking game wasn't clicking massively. But once we went ahead and Swansea were forced to come out, we looked a lot more dangerous on the counter-attack.
Interesting, isn't it, that we are, after so long, or one of the things that people used to say about Arsenal was that we're no good from set pieces. We never score from set pieces. We never score from corners. Yeah. They're a complete waste of time. And in recent weeks, that's proved not to be the case. We're actually quite good at that. And there was a good stat on Match of the Day that since his arrival, Giroud has scored 15 headers, which is more than anybody else in the Premier League in the same period. So that's good.
That is really good. Yeah, I saw that recently. And I do think delivery is improving as well. That was always the frustration. So often you'd see, you know, the corners hit the first man. We talked about it, I think, a lot last season, but it does seem to have been a marginal improvement there. Who knows? Maybe they've even practiced. Can you imagine?
Gosh. it sounds like almost plausible. And imagine the difference between getting the ball into a dangerous area and having it headed away by the guy standing at the near post. It's crazy. Must have just clicked one day on the training ground. Hey, what if we try this instead?
Yeah, exactly. Borja Primorac had a bright idea. He'd been trying to say it for years, and every time he spoke up, Arsene shushed him. He's like, Arsene, I have an idea. Shh, Borja, go and put the cones out like I've told you.
Yeah.
And then he just shakes his head sadly.
Go and help Rio Miachi with the cones.
Yeah, that's it. Rio Miachi injured again, apparently, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, poor old Rio. I think he's done his knee ligaments again out till January.
Oh, right.
There you go. Someone just told me that in passing last week.
Yeah.
Wish him all the best, but sort of not our problem anymore, is it?
Was that like the butter and jam thing? You were just walking down the road and some guy came up to you and said, by the way, Rio Miachi's done his knee ligaments again.
Yeah, I think it was Rio Miachi, actually. Yeah, just hoping for a bit of recognition. Anyway, so we went 1-0 up and then...
Second goal. Let me ask you.
Classic. Yeah, go on.
Foul or not? Like if it had been at the other end.
Ah, well, that's a different question. I was a bit surprised to see it not given as a foul. Let's put it like that.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. Just goalkeepers are so protected.
Well, they are, yeah. I mean, that is the surprise. The goalkeepers tend to get the benefit of the doubt 99.99% of the time.
I'm not convinced that anything untoward went on, but I think in 80% of cases, a referee blows up there.
I just said 99.99%, and you've just undermined me by 19.999%.
All right, well, let's call it, like, you know, 90.5 or whatever in the middle. I'm not a mathematician. Somewhere in the middle of that. A lot of the time, let's say.
I think really should have been stronger goalkeeping, to be honest.
Well, I mean, he's got previous, hasn't he?
He has. He's had his moments in the past, and we have been witness to those moments.
Yeah, I mean, I've always felt that Fabianski's reputation was a little... I mean, you know, he got better, didn't he, in his time at Arsenal, and his last season produced some pretty important contributions. Mm. But I always think back of him as a bit of an accident waiting to happen, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I was grateful for it this time.
Did you see the interview with Lauren Koscielny on Match of the Day where they asked him, you know, did you think it was a foul? He said, no, I don't know. You know, Olivier Giroud told me to put the ball in. I did. And then he just pissed himself laughing, which was quite funny. Just the face was like, right. Yeah, there probably could have been a foul there, because I think players know as well as anyone else how protected the goalkeepers are and the way that referees generally deal with situations like that. So maybe we got away with it a bit, but...
I've noticed a thing, and I don't know if it's just my sort of imagination, but you know Koscielny and Giroud, they're big mates, aren't they? They played together in France, and, you know, they. I think off the field, they're sort of bezzies. They're bezzies.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Right.
But it seems to me like they always score. Whenever Koscielny scores, Giroud scores as well. Obviously not whenever Giroud scores, Koscielny scores too. It doesn't all work that way around, because Giroud scores a lot more often. But like, they both scored against Everton this season.
Yeah.
I think they both scored. Did they both score at Bayern Munich a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
I think in 2013-14, they both scored against Sunderland and Newcastle. It's like they just have a little parties together. Interesting. I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah.
But I like it. I've got no issue with it.
No, I think it's good. I think it's good. You know, maybe they inspire each other.
Well, yeah. Or perhaps logically, they both score against teams who aren't very good in the air. I don't know.
But how many of those goals were actual headers? Because Koscielny's got a couple of goals, not necessarily from his head, but from sort of penalty box poaching more than thumping headers, you know?
Scrambles.
Yeah,
he
scramblers.
Likes a scramble.
Yeah, you know.
He loves a scrappy goal, doesn't he, Koscielny?
Yeah, like the one in the FA Cup final, remember? He sort of hooked it in and then got smashed to bits and, you know, couldn't celebrate it properly because he was probably quite hurt. But he does like those kind of scrambly ones from close range. So, yeah, I wonder how many of them were headers. Somebody could check.
Listen, Opta Joe or whoever it is, what's going on? Tell us. So 2-0 then, and then Joel Campbell iced the cake beautifully.
He really did. Lovely finish. And a goal, I think it would be fair to say, that he thoroughly deserved based on the performance in the game.
Yeah. I would agree with that. I thought in the first half, when we were struggling a bit, he was probably our best player. And then, you know, across the course of the 90 minutes, worked really hard. I mean, that is the main thing, isn't it? He worked exceptionally hard, as he did at Sheffield Wednesday, to be fair, but he was a little bit, well, quite a lot better on the ball this time. And I thought, yeah, really encouraging. I guess, I don't know. I mean, I guess, I think we have a tendency, I said this on my post-match video, but we have a tendency to really polarise players. You know, either we sort of build them up to be world-class or they become kind of joke figures.
Mm.
Whereas someone like Campbell, who's sort of on the fringes of the squad, kind of operates somewhere in between that. You know, he's probably not good enough to start for Arsenal week in, week out, but he's certainly good enough to be, you know, fourth or fifth choice in his position and come in and do a good job and probably would do all right for a number of Premier League teams. So I guess we've got to be glad that we've got someone like that in the squad. I think if you see how raw someone like Alex Iwobi looked in midweek, to have someone with his level of experience to come in is a real boost.
Yeah, you know, we have talked about him before. And I think a lot of the time you take your cue from the way the manager treats a player. Also,
yeah.
You know, that if a manager doesn't pick a guy or doesn't put him on when you need a goal and he's a forward, you kind of read things into that, which I think is perfectly natural. I don't think anybody would have ever said that Campbell at Arsenal was given a fair chance or given a reasonable chance to show what he could do. But at the same time, there's a reason why, for example, he wasn't playing ahead of Danny Welbeck, of Aaron Ramsey on the right-hand side, of other players. But maybe what he's done there as well is he's kind of he's put it up to the Ox a little bit, who would be ahead of him
would have been
ahead of him, certainly in terms of the manager's thinking and the way that he plays. But Oxlade-Chamberlain hasn't really taken his chances so far this season. He's been costly at times. And Campbell given a chance. And maybe there's a touch of the whole Coquelin thing going on here as well, that he knows that, look, these guys aren't going to be out injured forever. Hang on, this is Arsenal, they probably will. But no, he knows that they're going to be back at some point. So when he does get a chance, he's really got to try and make the most of it. Performance-wise, fantastic. Really worked hard. Deserved a goal. And that then gives the manager something to think about. And obviously provides him with a bit of a confidence boost as a player. You know, you could see it. There was a moment, wasn't there, a few minutes later where he went through on goal and he had Alexis inside and he had Ozil going outside him and he took a shot and smashed it not too far over the top corner of the goal. Alexis went bananas. Did you see the reaction? Yeah. He went bananas.
He wasn't chuffed for that.
But in fairness to Campbell on the day, I think he's it was fair enough for him to take a shot and to not actually pass it to Alexis, who didn't do an awful lot all day anyway, so...
Exactly. He didn't have his best game. And I think the other thing is that if you look back and think about the successful seasons that we've had at Arsenal, there are always these kinds of players who make, you know, not massive contributions, but who come in and do the odd, you know, score the odd goal. I always think of Chris Ray, you know, in 97-98, who I don't think any of us would claim was necessarily the best footballer who we've ever had on the books.
He was shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but he was George Weah's cousin. Come on. Yeah. I mean, how did he end up at the club? So strange, wasn't it?
I mean, the fact that he's George Weah's cousin is fine, but there must be like all these top footballers in the world. They all have cousins, and we never heard of any of them. Like you've never heard of like Lionel Messi's cousin or Pirlo's cousin. Just because they're vaguely related to a guy doesn't mean he's going to be any good at football.
Didn't Ali Dyer claim to be, you know, the guy Southampton signed and then had to take him off? Didn't he claim to be related to someone as well?
I think he claimed to be related to George Weah as well, or that he came through the George Weah Academy, or I'm just going to look it up.
I mean,
here.
Yeah. So what I was going to say was...
He convinced Graham Souness that he was the cousin of George Weah. Oh,
right.
Wow.
I think that's how Joel Campbell got into Arsenal. He convinced everyone he was the brother of Sol Campbell. And everyone's like, well, let's get him on board. That is the nice thing about Joel Campbell. All the songs are recyclable. You know, you can just slightly change a consonant and you've got to have a load of songs for him.
Yeah.
But what the point I was making was that you sometimes need these sort of curious little oddities of players to come in and make a contribution. And I think Campbell has put it up to Ox slightly, because what we always say with Chamberlain is that there's not enough end product. Campbell started one Premier League game and he's opened his account for the club. So I think it is quite a finite window of opportunity for him. I think it's basically until the international break. He's got the Bayern game if he's selected in that, and then the North London derby at the weekend. But I mean, those wouldn't be bad games to make your presence felt in. And I think if he can do that, obviously it might change things for him.
You know, he scores in every single Premier League game he starts in, Joel Campbell.
He's got 100% record. Yeah. 100% record.
So, look, that was us. Manchester City looked like they were about to drop some points until very late in the game, and their goalkeeper made a ridiculous mistake, and then they gave away a penalty. It was a good penalty to give away, though, the handball. You know.
Yeah, thanks, Norwich. Yeah. Thanks a bunch. But that's one where... I can't get too stressed out about that, because in my head they were winning that game about 6-0. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's not the one where we're going to win it. You know, where we're going to edge ahead. I don't think.
No.
City at home to Norwich. I think they'll canter through a lot of those teams.
Yeah. Chelsea lost again.
Chelsea. Yeah. Did you wholly enjoy that? Did you have any qualms about celebrating Liverpool's victory, or were you just fully on board?
Absolutely no qualms whatsoever. I thought it was hilarious.
Qualm-free.
I was absolutely without qualm. No, great. I mean, it's just fantastic. And the more irate and angry he gets, the better. Every week we're having this little moment to bask in his misery. The reaction when Lucas didn't get sent off was brilliant, just hilarious. Yeah. You know, just,
I mean, that was quite extraordinary that he didn't get sent off. I thought he was a little bit lucky, in fairness.
Yeah, I thought he was. Yeah. Even though we've spoken about this before, and I think there is a tendency to issue that second yellow card a bit too easily. You know, I think really sendings off should be something of a last resort. But hey, when the referee's decisions aren't going for you, you know, that's the way the cookie crumbles. So it doesn't seem like he's getting the sack yet. So hopefully there'll be more chances to enjoy his unhappiness.
Hopefully, yeah. Let's let him continue on. I think we play them in January. So if he could just hold on to that, and it'd be great to deliver the final blow, as unlikely as it seems. But it's a curious old situation, and poor old Cesc dropped to the subs bench. He's probably better off out of it, to be honest. He's probably chuffed.
Well, they did say certain players were saying after the game they'd rather lose than win for the manager, and that, if true, that's coming from a BBC reporter. If that's true, that really makes his position more or less untenable, I think. You can't turn that around. If you've lost the dressing room to that extent, you know, that's really, really difficult to get on top of again.
Yeah, well, the danger signs were there when Eden Hazard missed a penalty in midweek. Because he doesn't miss penalties. He can only have done that on purpose, I suspect.
Oh, yeah, nice. There's a good conspiracy theory for people there.
There we go.
All right, well, look, that'll take us to the end of this part of the show. We're going to come back in a second with part two and your questions right after this.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is the time where we answer your questions sent to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog with the hashtag ArscastExtra. So you can go first, or did you go first last week, or will I go first? Or how do you want to play it? How do we work this out?
I don't know. I mean, I wasn't worrying about it, but now I am.
Yeah,
but I'll tell you what, I'll
yeah.
go first.
Well, maybe we I'll should do first. Something. We should toss a coin.
Rock, paper, scissors. Okay, let's do that.
Okay, rock, paper, scissors. One, two,
okay.
three.
One, two, three.
I don't know, I can't see what you're doing.
It doesn't work on a podcast.
Rock.
It?
I had a rock.
Yeah, you would say that. You're just saying that because you can smell that I've got scissors. I don't know what. You go first.
Okay. Heads or tails? Oh, we don't have a tails here. We've a harp. Head or harp?
Oh, you don't have tails. Well, we don't have. To be fair, there's never. Oh, it's a coat of tails, is it? What? It's not a picture of an animal's tail, is it? On a coin, ever?
No.
But there is a picture of a head.
Well, not on this 1 euro coin. I've got a 1 euro coin, which has got a big number one, and then like Europe on the front, and then on the back there's a harp because it's an Irish issue.
Right. I mean, I've got a 2p here, and it's got the Queen's head on it, but it doesn't have the Queen's tail. It's got some sort of feathers on the other side.
Maybe that is her tail.
Maybe. You never see much below the head of the Queen, do you? She's not. She's often wrapped up, so it'd be difficult. She could be covered in feathers.
Yeah, I think it's probably part of the old royal interbreeding thing that they are. The entire lower part of their bodies are just covered in scales or feathers or.
Well, they're lizard people, aren't they? I'm sure that's been proven.
And we know that lizards are related to birds, and ultimately they come from dinosaurs. So what you're saying is that Queen Elizabeth is a velociraptor.
I mean, if someone can disprove it, I'll be interested to hear it.
All right, look, I'll go first.
Okay.
All that. This one comes from Alistair Wood at AliBoy82, and he said, if you had to win and lose one each of the next two games, which would you win and why?
The derby.
Yes.
It would be the derby for me. A, because I don't know. Well, I think in my head, the
we've
Premier
already
the
beaten
one, isn't
Bayern
it?
Munich. You know, it's kind of boring.
That's
if
it. We've done
them
it
again. You know, been there,
I mean,
done that.
I'd feel guilty about it if anything. Pep Guardiola's sad eyes, looking darker than ever. I think I think it's because it's all. I think it's all about the league for us this season. I think, as fans, I think there's a sense that even if we do somehow escape from the group of death featuring Dynamo Zagreb and Olympiacos, that we won't progress much further. You know, we've sort of grown accustomed and quite tired of that fact that we get eliminated in the early knockout stages, whereas it feels like there's a real opportunity in the Premier League. You know, we talked about Chelsea, Manchester United, dull as dishwater at the moment, aren't they? Really not particularly inspiring. So it feels like it could turn into a straight fight between us and City. And that's one we've got a real chance in. Also, I just can't bear to lose a North London derby. At least if we lose against Bayern, I won't have, you know, Bayern fans taunting me on my journeys around North London, waving their toast at me, just with jam all over it, no butter. Look what we've done. And I think it's got to be that. What about you?
Oh yeah, the derby, yeah, for sure, for sure. All because of how important the league is and the fact that we're in a good position in the league. Also the fact that, you know, it's Tottenham and they're cunts and you want to beat them every time. That rivalry is there. That isn't necessarily there with Munich, you know, just because we have to play them every year. Tottenham, that is. And Bayern, actually. It feels like we play Bayern every year as well. But, you know, the league is the one. The league is the competition on which the biggest focus has got to be, or it's the one that's most important for us. So, que sera, sera in Europe on Wednesday. Obviously, I'd like us to win, but if I had to choose, it would definitely be Sunday.
Arsene sort of let that slip, actually. There was a really interesting quote from him in the last week or so in which he said the league is our competition that we want to focus on. I don't know if it was, you know, just a slip of the tongue or whatever, but I think, you know, there is that sense around the club at the moment. And if we do go out of Europe, it won't be because of what happens this week. It will be because of what happened a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Okay, but on the subject of the Bayern game, at Gunnar Galla asks, do you think we're going to change formation for the trip to Bayern, like having an extra man next to Santi?
I did wonder about that, I have to say, whether or not they, you know, he might just stick a Flamini in the midfield area and be a little less attacking. But then I don't quite know what you do from the right-hand side. You know, it's interesting, isn't it? Because when we played them at home, we had Walcott as this outlet and whose pace we could use to sort of ease the pressure. You could see in the early part of the game how the players looked to find him over the top. They looked to find him very quickly. And that's not going to be the case with Giroud. He's going to have to hold it up against two very big, strong centre-halves and try and bring others into play. So I wonder if that might be an influence on how the manager sets things up. It wouldn't necessarily surprise me if Campbell was the one to miss out, and maybe he could bring
Flamini coming in. Maybe.
I mean, it's not ideal, to be honest. Like, it would be better if it was somebody, you know, who wasn't quite Flamini, but he might feel that kind of security away from home is the thing. But then, of course, Flamini is an auxiliary centre forward as well. We can push him on when we need to break. He'll just hang around. Yeah, he'll be a goal poacher.
The full six. I think if Flamini... The problem is there are two issues, I guess. One is Arsene's very wedded to keeping Cazorla in the middle of the park. I think he's shown that now, you know. And I think justifiably so. And the other thing to consider is that without Walcott, you know, let's say you took... Does that make keeping Campbell's pace in the side that much more important?
Yeah.
To give you a runner off Giroud as well as Alexis. So it's a really difficult one. I think he'll probably end up going with the same side, but that would be the change that I might anticipate, which could be to bring in Flamini for Campbell. You can keep Cazorla central, just in a more advanced role, and maybe push Ozil out onto one of the flanks, but as he did at Bayern, I think last time we were there. But that didn't work too well, as I recall. So we shall see. We shall see what happens. I think he'll go with the same side, but that's the one change that he might make.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to Matt Macy's debut in goal as well.
Yes, that obviously will be good. That will be good.
All right, this one comes from Darren Arsenal 1, who wants to know, is Remy Gard's arrival in the Premier League a precursor to him being favourite to replace Arsene Wenger when the time comes?
Mm. It's interesting, isn't it? Arsene's been talking up Remy Gard. It feels like for some time, it feels like for years he's sort of been on his radar. This is his first signing, I believe, when he... Well, he wasn't even technically at the club yet when Gard joined. He was one of the envoys, along with Patrick Vieira. I mean, it all depends on how Gard does. By all accounts, he did a very good job at Lyon in difficult circumstances at a time when they had some real financial problems. But, you know, it's a very different situation, Villa. And if he doesn't perform well there, he won't be in contention at all, whatever his connection, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, of course. And we know how managers can be hot property one minute and then just not in a very short space of time. You know, there's always the next guy who's going to come along and he's the next great young manager. He's going to be the guy who's going to do it. And I think what we've seen, in recent years is that consistency at managerial level is really, really, really difficult. Really difficult.
Yeah.
To maintain a level and to keep a team at a certain point, regardless of how frustrated you might be with some of the things we've done and or maybe haven't done, to maintain that level of consistency is the most difficult thing as a manager. And too many managers have had great seasons or a good half season or three quarters of a season, or, you know, a team has clicked and this kind of momentum has carried them through. And, you know, when it comes right down to it, they're not able to replicate that, you know? Brendan Rodgers is a great example.
Absolutely. I mean, it is Arsene's consistency, I think, that really marks him out above all others. And, I mean, Remy Gard, who knows? It really, really depends how it goes from him. I mean, I think that it's sort of speculative debate, really. I know you had Amy on the show. Did you have Amy on the show? And she was talking about possibly Thierry Henry.
Yeah, last week.
Quite well thought of.
Mm.
Yeah, and, you know, there's Mikel Arteta, who's doing more and more coaching with the club now and looking to take his badges and move that along. Patrick Vieira has been linked in the press with returning to the club in some sort of role from Manchester City. I actually happen to think that if and when Arsene does go, his replacement, in my opinion, will be somebody with more experience than those kinds of guys, and even someone like Gard, just because I think it's such a big ask to replace someone who's been a figurehead of a club for two decades that I think it will need someone with a degree of, you know, sort of global reputation and confidence and ability to step in and do that. You know, I think you don't want to run the risk of a kind of Moyes scenario. So that would be my instinct about how it will unfold.
Yeah, that is going to be the biggest problem, is the transition, simply because of the influence he has, not just as the football manager, but in every area of what the club does and how it operates and its transfer policy and everything else. You know, all of a sudden, if Arsene Wenger goes, there's a vacuum that probably will need to be filled by not just one man. You know, we may have to look at the model of a sporting director, or, you know, that kind of thing that most big clubs operate. And let the manager, or the manager, not so much the manager, but the first team coach. I think that's the job you see. So maybe that'll be that, but we'll have to wait and see. If Gard does well at Villa, then maybe he'll be a man for the job. But it's hard to know. It's hard to know. And I think Villa is a bit of a strange club at the moment anyway, isn't it?
I think they're in a bit of a mess, yeah. Mm. So I think it's going to be a big ask for him to keep them up, whatever happens, really. Let's have another speculative question. This is from Loris0.1, who's at human_0_1 on Twitter. And he asks, out of left field, Kevin Morales in January, yes or no?
No.
Okay, well, there you go. But, yeah. You know, it was worth him asking, wasn't it?
It certainly was. We got to the heart of the issue and answered him in the right way, I think.
Typically perfunctory style. Your go.
My go. I think I feel like you've got away with one there. You know. Okay,
here's Do you want another one?
I'll do one. This one comes from Richard Pike, and he wants to know, would you be happy to see Jamie Vardy at Arsenal?
I actually would be quite happy to see Jamie Vardy at Arsenal. I'm not sure that we need him. I also think, I mean, he's 28 years old. He'll be 29 in January. So I do think he'll be in a hurry to get himself a nice big move. But I think he's a really exciting player to watch. I love how direct he is. I love his pace. I think he's finishing really well. I think he's a real threat. And he was superb against us, actually, as well. I think if Danny Welbeck comes back, I think we've got, in Walcott, Welbeck and Giroud, a healthy contingent of strikers. If Welbeck has any kind of setback, then he's someone who I think is a genuinely interesting player, actually. I know that it's sort of difficult to ascertain if he's got that kind of, you know, Champions League level quality because he's come from so far from the non-league. But, you know, I know it's a different time, but Ian Wright was a very, very late bloomer. I think he arrived at Arsenal about 27, 28. I don't think it will happen, and I'm sure his price will be exorbitant given his Englishness and his form, but I definitely think he's an interesting player. What do you make of him?
I like watching him, I have to say. I like the way he just there's no messing about when it comes to his finishing. He smashes them,
Yeah, yeah.
There's no finesse. It's just absolute power every time, and I love watching it. You know, you do have to wonder whether or not he's a guy who is going through a particularly purple patch. You know?
Sure. I think he probably is.
I think he probably is. And he's in a team which is performing really well. And they've got some really exciting players, Leicester. They're fun to watch, the way that they play and the way that they attack. So I think it in a way, it might be a case that where he's at now is exactly the perfect place for him. You know, his role, his responsibility, the way that the team works, I guess, to a certain extent for him, and it brings out the best of his qualities. Maybe he wouldn't be so effective anywhere else. At 29, it's difficult to... 29 in January, you know, he's not a guy for the long term, but I like watching him, yeah.
Yeah, and it's very reliant on his pace, obviously, so it's all about if he can sustain that, really, over the next few years. This question is from at Naman Mera, and they ask, what was more hilarious from Jose, the 7-minute rant or nothing to say?
The 7-minute rant, for sure, because that was just like seeing a guy go off the deep end, whereas the nothing to say stuff, it feels a bit contrived or something, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, no, come on, go mad, please, if you wouldn't mind. So yeah, for me that was more enjoyable. It's good to watch people, you know, have vague breakdowns live on television, I think.
Unfurl.
Yeah, what do you think?
I enjoyed the 7-minute rant a lot as well, but the nothing to say, I don't know, there wasn't the same sort of madness in his eyes, but there was a sadness which brought with it its own glee in me. You know, like Horses for Courses, I like that I've got both that I can watch on YouTube whenever I like, you know, depending on my mood.
Yeah.
It's nice to have options.
All right, here's a question from Steady, at @I_amsteady. And he said, if you were to reshuffle our first 11 and put players in their worst possible position, how would the team look?
That's a great question.
So I reckon we can work this one out. So let's go goalkeeper.
Santi.
Yes. Okay, so goalkeeper is Santi Cazorla. Right back. So you got to find someone who just wouldn't be any good there.
I mean, so my first thought is Mesut Ozil.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because left-sided, so that's always a bit awkward, a wrong foot left back. Not a great defender.
Mm-hmm.
My only hesitation is, really, should we be putting him at centre-half here?
Ozil at centre-half, yeah. Yeah. I think that could work well, actually. Ozil at centre-half.
But then, who's your right-back? Maybe... What first 11 are we using? Can we sort of
we can use the whole squad here, I think. So,
okay. All right. Well, let's have Ozil at centre half, I think, in front of Cazorla.
Okay, we need another centre half then. So, let me just see. I'm just going to get the old squad list up here. You know, it's easier to see.
Teams. Yeah, of course.
There we go.
They'll be shouting it out at home.
Yeah.
Centre half. I mean, look.
Jack Wilshere?
Here's Jack Wilshere, maybe.
Theo Walcott.
Maybe Jack. Theo Walcott would be bad. Theo Walcott would be bad.
Okay, there is our defensive duo.
So I think maybe it's worth trying to get. I don't know, but might be worth trying to get Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain in as left back or something, because he's always giving the ball away, isn't he, in defensive scenarios. He's always making big errors at the back.
I could go with that. I could go with that. So we need a right back.
I mean, I'm thinking maybe...
Ospina.
Maybe some... Ospina? Yeah, that's not a bad shout. I was going to go for Arteta, because imagine him against a flying winger. It's not a fair matchup. Jefferson Montero against Mikel Arteta. But Ospina is a keeper.
Yeah, so that's
He's not going to be good.
That's great back five. Cazorla in goal, Ospina, Ozil and Walcott at centre-half, Oxlade-Chamberlain at left-back. We need a DM right now.
Flamini? No. let's have... see, the thing is, can't say Joel Campbell. I think he'd be quite good.
Yeah.
He's great in the tackle, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, you see, once you start getting into midfield, it becomes a little bit more. You can put forwards at the back and defenders up forward. But once you get into midfield...
Well, let's do the forwards next, I think.
Okay. Well, look, I think the right-sided forward, Permer to Saka.
Okay, yeah.
Because there's a need for that player, A, to be a bit pacey, B, to to be able to get up and down the pitch and track back. And as we know, centre halves, you know, they play there for a good reason. It's not that they don't like running per se, it's just that there's less running to do there than if you're playing, you know, at fullback. So that's why Vermaelen,
who plays in that position.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I remember having to play. When I come back from Spain, I joined a team and we were playing like Saturday properly, you know, organized league football, and I play center half, and I was one day asked to play right back on a very heavy pitch, and at one point the entire game stopped and I was wondering, why the fuck are all the guys looking at me? Why is everybody on the pitch looking at me? And I realized we had like a throw up by their 18-yard line and I was the guy that was supposed to take it. So I was going, oh, fuck, I'm not used to this running up. So I had to run up, take the throw, and then slowly trudge back, and didn't work out well at right back. So I think Mertesacker on the wing, yeah, he'd have a difficult time there.
Okay, I'm on board with that. This is getting trickier, though, now, looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
So who's your centre forward? Who's your number nine? Maybe... I mean, I'm tempted to say Wilshere. Because I feel like any challenge from a centre-half is an injury almost automatically.
Mm. But he can finish.
He can finish. What about...
Sonogo?
Arteta? Sonogo. Yeah, if we're allowed Sonogo, I mean, that's not the worst shout.
Yeah, maybe Arteta at centre-forward. Hmm.
He's not going to get away from anyone, is he?
No, he's not.
And he's not, you know, I mean, he's not a prolific goal scorer. He can finish, but not of late. He's not been scoring goals of late, apart from the penalty spot.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah, I could go with Arteta at centre forward.
All right, okay.
So now we need a left winger.
Who's our number 10? Who's our, like, Ozil replacement? Who's our creative force?
Gabriel? Debushi?
Yeah. Debushi left wing, I think, maybe.
Debushi left wing, yeah. We're yeah. Okay. But though he would at least have the physical thing, I think we need to make him...
Playmaker.
He's the playmaker, Debushi, for sure.
Yeah.
That's not going to work out well.
He's in a free role.
DM.
So maybe Gabriel's on the left wing, is he?
Yeah. Yeah, I could put Gabriel out there. I think he'd go mad.
So we need a couple of sort of holding deep-lying midfielders.
Yes. Bellerin?
Yeah, I mean,
but
he's
could
good
be good,
football.
Yeah. He is good at football, isn't he?
I mean, who have we not got? Danny Welbeck? I think he'd be all right.
Yeah. We've got the physicality, the pace.
He's got the stamina, hasn't he?
Yeah.
What about Kieran Gibbs in the centre of the park?
Yeah, I don't think that would work out well for...
I don't fancy it at all.
Hmm. So we need one more central midfielder.
Okay, Matt Macy's got a chance, hasn't he?
Alexis, dare I say Alexis, as a deep-lying midfielder? Because he tends to, he does have a habit of losing the ball a little bit.
And he would wander from his position.
Mm. Yeah. Defensive
discipline.
I think
put him in the Coquelin role.
Okay. All right then. So there's our team.
So run us through it.
Goalkeeper Cazorla, right back Ospina, centre halves Ozil and Walcott, left back Oxlade-Chamberlain. We've got Alexis as the DM, the Coquelin DM. Another central midfield player, Kieran Gibbs. Matthew Debussy is our playmaker, our number 10. The guy who's going to make things tick. On the right wing, Per Mertesacker. On the left wing, Gabriel. And up front, Mikel Arteta. Think that team would struggle.
Look, we've got a plan B because we can bring Petr Cech on. Imagine him having to go up challenging for aerial balls with that hat on. It'd be a nightmare.
Yeah. Though it would make the ball skid off all over the place, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. That is quite an extraordinary team. Maybe we'll put that out in the Capital One Cup next year or something. Who knows?
All right. Do you have one more?
Yes, I do. But I must confess, I'm worried that this will just spark another ruckus debate. Brooks, who's at Hairy Nose Dad on Twitter, says, I love Arsenal, but what is the best chocolate bar?
The best chocolate bar?
Hmm.
That's a really good question. I don't quite know.
The best, mind.
The best.
Not what's quite good. The best chocolate bar. Not even your favourite. The best.
Oh, but surely my favourite is what's the best, in my opinion.
Well, you'd think that about toast, Andrew, but clearly not.
What would be the best chocolate bar? Like, the big ones are kind of boring, you know? Snickers and the Mars, the Milky Ways. They're classics for a reason, but they're not that exciting, are they?
You've grown fatigued of them.
Yeah. Over the years.
Do you remember Cadbury's Fuse?
No. What's that?
It was short-lived. It had like a 2-year lifespan. It was really weird. It had like raisins in it and like, I don't know, dynamite or something. Mm. It was sort of horrible, but you know, they put a lot of marketing behind it. What are you buying?
What am I buying? I don't really buy. I like the Reese's Pieces peanut butter cups, have to say.
Do you know what? That is a great shout.
I think that could be right up there with the best. Even though when you go to America, and I don't know if you've ever done this, bought some Hershey's chocolate and then eaten the Hershey's chocolate. And then you realise, this chocolate tastes like vomit. Why does it taste...
It is horrific.
It is unbelievable. I don't understand. Is there something... What is with the taste buds of American people? Are we that different that we can't... We just can't process what this is? Because Hershey's make Reese's Pieces peanut butter cups, as far as I'm aware. It's the same people. But the Hershey's chocolate on its own is, frankly... one of the most disgusting things I've ever, ever eaten. So, yeah.
I would concur. It's good to know that we're back on side.
Yeah, I'm glad we found some common ground again. Yeah.
Finally. I'm with you on the Reese's Pieces as well. Big fan. I have to say, of the classics, I'd be going Snickers as well. So there's a strong peanut theme running through my choices.
I would definitely be like Snickers above a Mars or a Milky Way or a Twix or anything like that. Marathon, as they used to be called, of course, when times were good. That was the best time of life when
that
Snickers
made them
was called
seem
Marathon.
Healthier.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was good. What else? I'm a big fan of peanut butter M&Ms too. Not peanut butter, peanut M&Ms. Just peanut M&Ms.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm glad. I thought this was going to create more division, this question, but actually it's created a rather harmonious atmosphere in the podcast.
Excellent. This is good. Maybe there's a future for us after all.
Maybe. Maybe we will stay together.
All right. Well, look, we'll leave it there. Keep fingers crossed for the game against Bayern on Wednesday. And we'll be back to discuss a North London derby, James, next week. North London derby.
It's exciting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very exciting.
It is.
They play tonight. They play Aston Villa. The Tim Sherwood derby. the team
that he's not even involved in.
No, but he'll be watching. He'll be watching.
Yeah.
Oh, Tim.
All right, we'll catch you on the next one, and I'll be here on Friday with a regular old Arsecast for you, looking ahead to that game against Tottenham. So until then, cheers.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.